You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy. With me is Tom Chabria. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Somewhere in that great gray area between everything that isn't basketball, Dynamo getting ready to start. You know, we're waiting for the draft for the Texans. The Astros are starting to get ready to start. So, and then basketball is at the All-Star break. So it's like the opposite of the sports solstice, if you will. But the Olympics are holding me over. So as long as I get more curling, because curling is the best Olympic sport, we'll not hear any different. We're good.
We're going to have to throw hands over that one. That's not the correct opinion. The best winter Olympic sport, because I don't even like, I swam year round for a long time, so I have a partiality to swimming. But the best Olympic sport in the Winter Olympics is speed skating.
Don't get me wrong. I'll watch it. But there is something about the curling thing where they're making these rocks move all over the place, yelling and screaming. Like, give me that.
And I think downhill skiing is more exciting than curling. Curling is cool, but like the luge, bobsled, like, I don't know. I can name a few sports.
I only want to see any of that if somebody wrecks. I'm looking forward to like mayhem that way.
What did John Mayer say? Why Georgia? I don't know. Anyway, that wasn't a good joke, but I agree that the severity of injury in those sports is probably a lot more likely than in curling, but I don't know, man. I always liked speed skating because of Paulo Anton Ohno. And I actually last night, I guess it was yesterday at like 9:30, the 1,000-meter final for men's happened. And so we took the gold in that one. And I'll take a moment to say, like, I remember the Olympics being so much more intense and like closely followed growing up. And I think a couple things that contribute to the like lessening of it is that like with social media, like I knew who got the gold in a lot of these things before I even watched it on prime time. I think that another part of it is that, I mean, I don't know. Say what you will about what I'm about to say. Maybe I'm being what, you know, those athletes are in a sense, but I think this whole vibe of like, I have to apologize first and foremost for being an American before I compete for America is just a very annoying thing to watch. I don't like watching athletes that are about to represent my country apologize for representing my country before they go and represent my country. So I like Chloe Kim. Like, I think that's the perfect representation of like in a tough time. America's in a tough time. I mean, there's things going on that not everyone agrees with, but you open with, I'm really excited to represent my country. I'm proud to be an American. I don't agree with everything America does, and I think that we can work on ourselves, but this is great. I'm proud to be on the Olympic stage representing America. That's, I think, perfect. But now I'm going to step down off my soapbox. We'll talk about the Texans, or at least Houston sports. Let's get into it. The season didn't end the way we wanted it to, and I think that this offseason is very pivotal. I think we've been saying that for like 2 or 3 offseasons now, but this offseason is very pivotal to the Texans. I think more so than the past couple because of some narratives and storylines that we're going to end up finding out about throughout this offseason. But to start with, what do you think the big issue was at the end of the season? And what part of this offseason do you think is going to be most pivotal to fixing it?
It's a really interesting question because I think it changed all season long. Like early in the season, I feel like it was probably an offensive line thing. You know, towards the middle of the season, I think it kind of gravitated towards the coaching realm thing. Towards the end of the season, it looked like a quarterback thing. So there was just so many different things that just didn't line up, especially. And the crazy thing to me is, like, I feel like that's normal for a lot of other teams. I think every team goes through these same struggles. And, you know, the ones that overcome it are the ones that, you know, make it to the Super Bowl and have a chance to win the whole thing. I really feel like the Texans are really close. It's going to be I think the statement you made about it being pivotal for the last 3 years seems a little awkward because there had to be growing pains, right? And I think a lot of people just assumed, hey, we got these shiny toys, this great talent. They should be good immediately. And I think a lot of people are quick to rush to that. And for me, I think you have to have some sort of, okay, I'm not going to be good at whatever I got to do immediately right away. And the people that work for me or under me, there's going to be training there. There's going to be growing pains there. But my sports franchises can't have them. And I just can't get with that. I feel like you have to understand when you go young, you have to let that stuff grow. There's a lot of people right now that are super frustrated with the Houston Rockets for the exact same reason. They are not okay with not being ready to go because they went out and traded for a generational superstar in Kevin Durant. So the Texans are kind of in that same vein too, where a lot of people expected because you saw the potential last year and forgot, like, this is a process. It's not like, okay, put it all together and boom. It's gonna work year one. So I get that the Texans underachieved for a lot of people. I think if you told me when the season started last year that the Texans were gonna be in a serious, you know, divisional game with a chance to go to the championship game, and you know, if the weather was probably better, maybe they win that thing. I mean, you probably take it. So I know I said a lot there, so I'm going to turn it back over. But I really feel like people have to have a little perspective, and then this is the year. You're right. I think this year is very pivotal because a lot of people's contracts happen now. We're going to get into that. But that's the more pivotal thing than anything that happened prior.
Yeah, and I think so. To speak to the end of the season, I think that, like you said, the issue with the offense shifted and changed throughout the season. And I don't know if we can, like, in the onset of what happened, I think a lot of people turned to CJ, and CJ has his fair share of blame in that, I would say a significant portion. But there are other things that had been plaguing the offense all season long that played into what happened to the Texans in New England. The run game was not able to get off the ground. The offensive line was not able to give the lanes that were needed for the run game to get off the ground. And then also pass protection took a step back in that game against a defense that is really good, but you would hope. And the reason I say this has been a pivotal, you know, several off seasons in a row where that's been the case, is that those same off seasons, the issue has been known that the Texans offensive line is not built optimally in order to protect CJ Stroud and run the rock, which obviously takes time to fix, but it doesn't feel like a lot of effort has been put into fixing that. And so now, each offseason, I think we can both agree to some extent, most Texans fans have said, you know, we use all of our picks on offensive line, like go after the best offensive linemen, get the guys in that building that need to be there in order to protect CJ Stroud, which is the common. And then the less talked about is the guys in that building that need to run block. And I think we can look back to the Kenyon Green pick, and we can see that Nick Caserio was looking to try and get a guy who could develop as a pass blocker and was a known mauler in the run game. And it just didn't pan out. The guy wasn't developed. It didn't develop in the way that he needed to. But I would say, I think it's same old story, same old song and dance, as Aerosmith once said. You know, we're looking at a Texans team that's going into the offseason with at least the fans. Caserio doesn't know what a need is. So I couldn't begin to guess what's on his brain as far as what the Texans are going to do this offseason. But it's the same old story from most outlets, that the Texans are looking to get better in the trenches on both sides. And that's to say the Texans have have been able to get away with. I've spoken to it a lot, this bargain bin method of filling out the interior defensive line. But in a league that has shown the importance of that, the Seahawks, and I'll talk about it in a minute because I have pulled up in front of me the Texans draft history. But looking at the Seahawks' use of first round picks over the past 3 years, a team that just won the Super Bowl, they managed to hit on just about every single first round pick, and they hit on positions of need, you know, positions that are considered to be top tier. The only position they didn't draft in the past 3 years to fix was quarterback. But looking at it through their first three rounds of their drafts, they filled out running back, they filled out cornerback, they filled out interior offensive and defensive line with players that graded out really well. Players that Texans fans each year had really wanted to be Texans, but because the Texans didn't have an off year like Seattle did to get a little higher draft pick and move into premium position and make those picks, the Texans are going to have to get creative in using free agency and the draft to fill these positions. And I think this is a good year where a lot of what needs to happen is it kind of comes down to Caserio hitting on the draft, which, depending on how you view Caserio's ability to draft, is could be a good or bad thing. And that kind of leads into my next question. How do you feel about Nick Caserio's history of drafting in the first round since he's been GM? And where is your confidence level at that Nick Caserio can use these top 50, top 75 picks in this draft to fill out what is needed, understanding that obviously some of it will come from free agency? There's, you know, there's centers and other players and position groups that are in free agency looking really good to fill out what the Texans need. But what is your confidence level in terms of, you know, Caserio getting the draft, understanding what needs to be drafted and using those picks to build this team to where it needs to be?
I personally, just a second, have the utmost confidence. Oof. I the biggest air and it just like choked me up. I have the utmost confidence. I don't see this being an issue like people want to see it. I really think like every GM struggles. Hold on. Give me just 1 second.
Okay. But while Tom is coughing it out, if you're one of the few sickos that's here with us this early into the offseason, the Super Bowl was on Sunday, and you're here ready to talk about the Texans offseason, if you want to hop in the comments, like Brandon Halam, OG legend of Texans chat comments, then feel free to drop, you know, what you'd like to be heard in the chat. We'll try and get around to everyone. But Tom, now that you're able to breathe again, I'll turn it back over
to you. I got so excited to talk, I almost choked myself out. I apologize. I don't have this issue with Nick Caserio. I think that you have to have a little bit of, it's not a perfect system. You can't just go because he's a good GM, he's going to get every pick right. I guarantee you the Seahawks in years past did not get every pick right. You have to be willing to go, okay, if I make 50 picks over 5 years, you know, 10 of them are going to be good, maybe 5 of them will be great. So everybody that wants to hyper pick one here, pick one there. Brandon did a really good job talking about Kenyon Green, John Metchie, Juice Scruggs, Blake Fisher. Like, it's so easy to just hyper focus there and then forget Woody Marks and forget Petrie and forget Kamari Lassiter and forget, you know, all the Jalens, all the Jadens. Like, you can't forget those. And it's like, you can't sit there and go, he can't draft when he goes and gets these guys that everybody else could have gotten, didn't. Like, we're not talking about him taking 1A or 1 of 1 and pick number 2. These are third round picks, fourth round picks, fifth round picks. And he's getting them in moving up, moving down. You know, like, I really think Nick Caserio does a really good job with the draft. I know we're going to hyper focus on his misses, but I think what you need to do is concentrate on his wins. Right now, I feel like he's got more wins than losses when it comes to the draft. If you just want to stack up bad picks, good picks, there's a lot of good picks in there. So for me, I'm not concerned about, can he do it, when, you know, kind of like the question you pointed, because I don't think that's fair. He's proven he can do it. Now, will he get it right? That's another story entirely. we're all very hopeful. We're going to do mock drafts. There's going to be tons of people that are going to do mock drafts. There will be tons of people that are going to say, this is what the Texans should do. And then if it works out that that person's on the board and Casario doesn't take them, there's going to be tons of people that go, Casario screwed this draft up. So I think we will not know exactly how good or how bad or whatever till they get on the field next year. And I mean, I think, you know, some of the holes that he has, he can address in free agency. Center, there's this really prominent center that's going to be out there. I'm sure we're going to talk about it. And then the perfect scenario for any team is just draft best available. And I really hope that's what he's allowed to do.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what he will do. He, like I said, he doesn't know what a need is. He knows who the best player available is in his opinion based off of research, and that's generally where they tend to go. Now, for me, I've pulled up Nick Casario's draft history, and I want to cover 21 and 22, but I think speaking to this, you can speak to how important coaching is in terms of how a team performs and how the talent that is drafted is utilized. Because in 2021, three of the five players drafted are still on the team: Davis Mills, Nico Collins, Brevin Jordan. And then if you look at 2022, understanding that it's not likely they bring Christian Harris back, only two players that they drafted in 2022 are still on the team, in Derek Stingley and Jalen Petrie. That is a draft where that was their first draft with significant capital back. They had nine draft picks in that draft. So between 14 draft picks to only have five players back, it seems like a low number, but even then that is a pretty significant hit rate given the coaching that was there. We move into 2023. Obviously, there's a lot of players still on the roster there, and C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, Tank Dell's making his comeback, Dylan Horton, Henry Toa, Jarrett Patterson, Xavier Hutchinson are all players that are still on the roster as it stands. Brandon Hill is the only player from that draft that is not still on the roster right now. I would venture a guess to say some of those players probably won't be on the roster once the offseason's over. I'm looking at Juice Scruggs as a primary cut candidate. Just based off of how that room needs to be restructured, but maybe they view it differently than I do. But even then, that in 2023 was a draft where the Texans were such a bad team going into that season that even you can speak to how coaching utilized those players, but I think even more so was the fact that all of those players were probably going to be expected and hopeful to contribute to a team that was just not very good. The fact that they've stayed overall these years, I think, speaks volumes to the quality of the picks. But looking at 24, this is another year where they didn't have a first-round pick, or they did and they traded it out. But you've got Kamari Lassiter, Blake Fisher, Kalen Bullock, Cade Stover, Jamal Hill, Jawar Jordan, who was cut but is now back on the roster, along with Solomon Bird. The only two players in that draft that are not currently on the team, Marcus Harris and Ladarius Henderson. And Ladarius Henderson, they're both employed elsewhere as practice squad players. So I would say, once again, coaching being up kind of gives the Texans a better look. And then in this most recent draft, Jaden Higgins, Ursary, Noel, Jalen Smith, Woody Marks, Jalen Reed, Graham Mertz, Keontae Hamilton and Luke Lachey are the only two players. Once again, we're looking at late round, like sixth and seventh round picks that don't make the roster. So Casario's history in terms of hits, in terms of guys that stay on the roster, is one thing. There are certain position groups that I think have been more serviced outside of the draft. I wouldn't go as far as to say that O-line has been miserably handled. I think that, once again, coaching combined with who Casario put in there and gave them options to play eventually led to a more serviceable offensive line. There's a question of if Casario can use these picks in this draft to give them not only serviceable players, but start to move towards creating an offensive line that is fueled by elite talent in the ways that it needs to be. We've seen over the past few years the importance of interior offensive and defensive line to these teams winning. The Seahawks suffocated the Patriots with their defense, which was very heavily, through the pass rush, and the Texans already have a really good pass rush. But then on the other side, even when the offense didn't look great for Seattle, I mean, Kenneth Walker was finding holes and he was getting some really good run blocking up front, and the pass protection didn't necessarily let Sam Darnold down. The Patriots defense is really good, but their offensive line did not fail Sam Darnold. A team that doesn't turn the ball over means their quarterback is getting at least some of what he needs. He's doing what he needs to protect the football, and that is in part due to what the offensive line is doing. So to answer the original question of first three rounds, do I trust Nick Caserio? I think that we don't have any reason not to trust him to get quality picks that will make the roster. I look at last year's draft, and I look at a team that did have a need at wide receiver. I don't know if the need at wide receiver was so severe as to spend two top 80 picks on a wide receiver. I'm thankful for the players that came of it. But when I look back at that draft, my biggest thing is, and I recently saw this from a lot of people in terms of rating out the guard talent that came out of that draft and how they performed. The Texans had a couple of opportunities in that stretch of picks to take Tate Ratledge out of Georgia and passed on him. And it's not to say that he would have done great in Houston, but he did great in Detroit. And I look back at that and it comes back into the fact that, like, sure, the Texans got Jalen Knoll, who's a great return man and contributed in the way he did. If I'm choosing right now between Jalen Knoll and Tate Ratledge, I'm taking Tate Ratledge every time, knowing what the Texans need. If I can bump Titus Howard back out to right tackle and not have to worry about that position and continue to have that depth, I think it gives this team a better chance of functioning as an offensive line. Now, hindsight's 2020. We can't look back and say that, but the biggest concern for me and the reason why I'm not all in, like I'm not concerned per se about Nick making these picks. My concern is that Nick comes across as a guy who wants to be the smartest guy in the room a lot of times. Whether or not that's true or not only he knows that. But he'll go out there and say things like, I don't know what a need is, best player available and stuff. And if we come into this draft and another set of questionable picks is made with players that will contribute, I have no doubt based off Nick Caserio's history that he will pick players that will contribute to this team. The question is, will they contribute in a way that's going to make this team a Super Bowl contender, or in a way that makes Nick Caserio look like he's capable of drafting the best player on the board at the time? And I mean, that to me is the conundrum with Nick Caserio. I've apologized to him for my assessment of his ability to field offensive linemen, because I think overall he has given the team a talent to be serviceable. And I think that I mean, he can give them serviceable at every position, I think. But the real question is can Nick look past, hey, this really great player is available right here, but also if we don't pick this offensive lineman right here, he will not be on the board later in the draft. Because that's the troublesome thing, and this will kind of lead into the next talking point, is that offensive linemen on the whole, whether it's free agency or the draft, their stock is very hard to gauge because the value is very good later in the draft, but you have to know what you're talking about. And early in the draft, teams that are desperate to make a move that is outwardly appearing as we are making progress at fixing our offensive line will reach on and on. Like we watched last year, the Alabama guard, Tyler, his name's eluding me, the Cowboys drafted him. He was projected to be late first, second round pick, and the Cowboys jumped at 15 to take him. I mean, these players will be a little overvalued. And so that kind of leads into my next talking point, which is that the Texans offensive line is going to be a core talking point in this offseason. One of the big pieces is going to be Ed Ingram. That's going to affect how this shapes up. I think you could see the Texans draft four offensive linemen if Ed Ingram is not re-signed, because of the need to fill out depth like later in the draft and pick up guys early in the draft that could potentially start. But if the Texans can keep him, that number, four is an exaggeration. Probably three, I think, is the most I could see them doing. But that also it is without considering free agency. I know Tom's looking at me like I'm crazy. So, but Ed Ingram is a huge piece of this puzzle. What I want to talk about is how the guard market could affect that decision. So a lot of people are placing his market at 12 to 15 million, and they're saying either that's easy money, the Texans should pay him, or if he asks for a dime over this such and such an amount, don't pay him. Whatever, however you feel about it, I think Ed Ingram, it'd be best if he was back in a Texans uniform. I think he wants to be back in Houston. I don't think he has any reason not to want to be back in Houston outside of the money being a lot better elsewhere. Last year, the big talking point was the Texans need to go in, make a splash in free agency, pick up a guard. And you had guys like Will Fries, out of Indy, who was projecting at like 15 million as well. I think he ended up signing a $20 million contract. That market will inflate because interior offensive linemen are becoming very apparently the core of any good offense in the NFL. So how do you feel about how Ed Ingram's situation is going to affect the Texans' approach to the offensive line this offseason?
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
I don't think he by himself is going to affect the Texans' approach. I think you really have to decide, or not you, but I think the Texans have to decide, okay, can we draft these guys like you're saying, taking your entire draft of offensive linemen, or is there no one in the draft that we think that can fill these roles, and then we need to go pay somebody that's proven because we do feel like we're a team that can get all the way to, the Super Bowl. I don't know. For me, there you can't just single out guard. You could look at, okay, maybe I need a center. And there's a market for center. You can look at, okay, maybe we have a guard and we need a right tackle, because while Trent Brown is great, he can't stay healthy. So there are different ways to skin this cat. So I don't know that I can sit here and tell you, oh, if Ed Ingram is the linchpin. If once we know what happens with Ed Ingram, then we know what the Texans can do, can't do, who they can sign, who they can't sign. I think in a perfect world, they bring him back. I think he was very, very good for stretches. I think obviously he had his flaws too. He wasn't like the perfect, all pro, right guard or anything like that. I do think that the line was very good with him in it. So it'll be interesting. I don't think they pay $12 million for him. That seems like a lot. You're talking about having to pay, Will Anderson Jr. and having to pay CJ Stroud. Like, can you really pay premium dollar for, these line pieces and pay premium dollar for a wide receiver and pay premium dollar for, a cornerback like Derek Stingley Jr.? So at some point you can't pay everybody's max number. You know what I mean? You have to find value somewhere. And maybe that's how they do it. The problem is that no one's going to like it. Right now, people are so hyper-focused on the offensive line and how to get this team to the Super Bowl. And all they really had to do was not turn the football over. And that starts with number 7. So as much as we want to talk about the offensive line, as much as we want to talk about the offensive coordinators, the real key to me going into the offseason is finding a way to get 7 right. Because there were times in those playoff games where he wasn't under duress and just wasn't good with the football. And that has to change. There has to be a comfort. There has to be a live to fight another day mentality instead of just forcing stuff. Psychologically, CJ's got to grow for any of this to happen, because as the great JJ Watt said, if you got a quarterback, you got a shot, but if you don't, you don't. And those last 2 games of the season, CJ Stroud was not a quarterback that could get you where you need to go.
CJ Stroud needs to get right mentally. I can't deny that. But I think, and I agree with this thought process, it's one I've seen play out, and it's where I'm at right now. The Texans need to address 2 things in order to help CJ Stroud out to the maximum extent possible, which, I mean, the obvious ones are pass protection, giving him the time. But I think the biggest thing that failed him in that game, if we're looking to assign blame to anyone, is the run game. The run game was literally non-existent. The Texans shifted very quickly to just dropping back and passing the ball in that game because they couldn't get any movement with the run game. So I look at the offensive line as part of it, right? And if you want to look, I'm about to disclose the difference between Trent Brown and Titus Howard, because in terms of PFF grading, because as much as that's not the primary thing, I still feel best about Tytus Howard at right tackle.
JJ, turn this off. We're not talking about PFF for you.
I was surprised to find the difference between Tytus Howard and Trent Brown's rating was in favor of Trent Brown at right tackle. But anyway, and that could also be wrong too, because I think it's factoring Tytus Howard's guard snaps as well. But anyways, I think that you have to look and address the offensive line. And I think that's the reason why I wouldn't mind if the Texans gave up a significant capital to move up and get Jeremiah Love. I wouldn't mind if the Texans dropped significant capital on a proven running back in free agency. I wouldn't mind if the Texans did just about anything to bring in someone who will bar none, and it's not a knock on Woody Marks. I thought Woody Marks did really well with what he was given. I think Woody Marks could do really well if the offensive line made significant improvements. I think that Juwan Jordan showed us something that's worth hanging on to. I think that Dario Gambale's time on the roster is just about done because he's a free agent, and I'm not sure how much sense you can make of bringing him back if you're going to bring in another running back. I think that Joe Mixon literally could have been the difference for this running room, because I think that he's proven in his time in Houston that when he's healthy and toting the rock, the poorness of the run game in terms of blocking doesn't really affect him as, you know, it affects him and he could be better, but he can make up for a lack of run blocking in and of himself. So I think that it's very important that that gets right. And so to get to the original question of how Ed Ingram affects this, let me list you the depth chart on the offensive line. Left tackle, we have Ariante Ursery. Left guard, Tytus Howard. Center, Jake Andrews. Right guard, Ed Ingram, currently not under contract. Right tackle, Trent Brown, currently not under contract. So if neither one of those guys return, the rest of the depth chart reads Blake Fisher at tackle, and then you've got Jarrett Patterson, Juice Scruggs, and Jarrett Kingston as your backup offensive lineman. I would venture a guess there's a possibility of moving on from Jarrett Patterson because his cap hit, for some reason, even though he was drafted significantly later than Juice Scruggs, is like $3 million, which is enough to, I mean, do you value him as a depth piece or do you want to move on? I think he's valued enough as a depth piece. It's unlikely he's cut, but it is something to consider. Juice Scruggs, you don't save much. That's a cut that you make because you want to fill that room out with different people. I mean, I don't think Juice has shown enough based off of his draft status to warrant continued employment by the Texans. That being said, I think that he could continue to be employed because he was drafted in the second round and you don't want to give up on that too early. Jarrett Kingston, there's other players not shown on here that are practice squad guys for the offensive line. But with that in mind, the Texans would have a starting offensive line and Jarrett Patterson and Blake, or, and Jarrett Patterson, which who would actually be the starter. You would have starters at Jarrett Patterson at right guard, and you would have Blake Fisher at right tackle, and you would have Juice Scruggs as your depth. So I know you scoff at the Texans drafting four offensive linemen. The Texans this past season carried tackle depth on both sides. They didn't just carry one swing tackle in the back. They had two tackles. Granted, Fisher was playing six man on the field a lot with the heavy package. And then they carried three, a backup center and two additional guards. So I know free agency will probably be used, and there's not, I mean, they could just keep Juice Scruggs. Like, I don't know if it's likely they cut him, but there is a situation in my head where it could legitimately just be necessary to draft four offensive linemen. You want young guys you can develop behind that you can get late in the draft. This is a draft where guys like Keelan Rutledge out of Georgia Tech, the whole Iowa offensive line, which was voted the best offensive line in college football, half of it is literally rated in a third, like fourth round and later, into like their center and one of their guards. I'm about to show later I put together a PFF mock draft just to get us kind of started on the right foot with a little bit of visuals. In the future, Tom and I will each have one, but I thought it was a spur of the moment thing. But one of my favorite potential picks for the Texans is Jennings Dunker out of Iowa, who is a tackle that played a lot of guard and center, or he didn't play center. Actually, he wants to play center, but he has a lot of flexibility and would be a good pickup. But I think that the move with Ed Ingram changes the vibe of, like, we have to draft as many offensive linemen as possible, or we have to make a lot of offensive line acquisitions this offseason to maybe we now have a starter there. Maybe we bring Trent Brown back. I don't know. but there's some moves there that will significantly affect how many offensive linemen are in the draft, how many they address in, you know, free agency and everything. But I think the key domino is going to be, does Ed Ingram want to repay the Texans for reviving his career and take a little bit of a pay cut, or does he want to take the highest contract that a team will offer him to go play out his days wherever? Because I another vital part of that is, and it's part of the formula that Nick Caserio relies on, when you build a player back up, they risk not being good when they leave. We saw that with Sheldon Rankins, where, granted, it was an injury, but he left, went to Cincinnati, took the money, and found that it was the grass wasn't greener and came right back to Houston right afterwards. So maybe that could be a situation in the future with Ed Ingram, but from what I know, he wants to be back in Houston. And so it'll be a matter of, can the money work? Is there really that big of a gap between his market and what people are willing to pay for quality interior offensive lineman talent? So that's kind of where I'm at. But let's see. We got a question here from Brandon Halam. Says, would 2 years from now, would you rather have paid Titus or Ingram? I'll go first. I think that paying Titus makes more sense because of his flexibility. I've been down on Titus Howard in the past, but this sudden surge of people that just want him off the team today is crazy given what he has given to this team, both at guard and tackle. Barring a significant improvement over what you have in him, I can't see moving on from him. But I would really like to pay Ed Ingram. So, but I don't know, Tom, where are you at on that discussion?
It's Titus Howard and it's not close. I really think you have to look at Titus Howard's flexibility, his willingness to do it. Ed Ingram, can he stay healthy enough? That's a question for me. I mean, there was a reason he was available in the first place. Like, it wasn't like, you know, they went and poached him from this other good team where he was, you know, all world. And, you know, they were like, man, we hate to lose Ed Ingram.
But, he's in like a Juice Scruggs like situation.
Exactly.
That wasn't playing.
So don't get me wrong. I think he can still be really good. And if there's a right number, I think you bring him back. I'm going to push back a little bit on the four offensive line thing for the simple fact that all the guys that you named can still be depth pieces and you can still go get, you know, two guys in free agency and one guy in the draft and be good. I really feel like this team won't play too much with the, oh, well, let's just put a bunch of young guys out there and develop them. When you have a team with a generational defense and a quarterback on the last year of his rookie deal that you're trying to, you know, get the most out of, I think that's where you go and you spend some money in free agency for premium, you know, center, premium left guard or right guard, whatever. And I don't know if Ed Ingram's that. If I'm going to pay $12 million, it's probably going to be for like the top right guard in football versus Ed Ingram.
$12 million is like, not, that is very little in guard money.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I would invest it, like, I'd rather spend the extra coin and just get a really good one than pay $12 million for a dude that's just so-so, if that makes sense.
But the thing is, Ed Ingram, I didn't think was so-so. I thought he was, his top half of the league in terms of guard play. There was points where he was playing, like, the best guard in the league. I'd be the first to admit it wasn't the whole season, but I think that under it shows his development under the coaching gives me enough reason to believe if you can get him at 12, I think it'd be a miracle. But if you can get him at $12 million and continue to develop him, you might see the best is yet to come from him. And I think he'll be thankful for it. And I don't know. That's just wishful thinking on my part. But then we got another question from Brandon that says, who might be the next Ed Ingram Caserio finds? I haven't done enough research on that to have a solid answer, but I will say that there's been a lot of talk about the Raiders having Jackson Powers, or I can't remember exactly what his name is, but he's an interior offensive lineman who his play time was severely cut under Pete Carroll, but that could be asset mismanagement. Not quite sure that necessarily means that he'd be available. And a lot of Raiders fans at the thought of that, you know, in the comments were like, no, don't, you can't have him. He's part of our team, which I, you know, don't know what to make of that. So I haven't looked into it too much. Tom, do you have like a better answer on that?
I really don't. It's way too early for me to kind of see who's out there or what, like that, you know, there's probably going to be guys that get cut that those are the guys that we're talking about. So until they present themselves coming off of another team, it's kind of hard to see that. I do know that Nick Casario is very good at it. The 1 year prove it deal thing where it's like, look, I'm trying to catch somebody, you know, coming off an injury or a down season or mismanaged, not used properly, a la Jalen Petrie, you know, where, you know, you can turn around and put him in a better position to be successful around, you know, a different scheme or something. That screams like a Nick Casario type thing. Again, you just got to wait to see, you know, who becomes available and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, and I think this is something where it will probably be one of the interior offensive or defensive line positions where we see them do that. So be interested to see how that looks. And I, yeah, you know, I have learned under Nick Casario's tenure to not take any seventh round pick sent away for a player that's not performing well lightly. So let's see. Right now, I want to end the show on this. What, I've got a PFF mock draft up. Like I said earlier, I'm gonna get Tom set up with that, and in the future we'll each have one. This one's a 3-round mock, no trades, just kind of feeling out where I was trying to play in this case closer to Nick Casario, but there were times where I didn't go for the value. I did wait to pick players based off of trying to get as close to where their value is based off PFS rankings as possible. But in some of these cases, I think I went in a different direction than maybe Nick Casario would. So I'll bring it up right now. We got in the first round, Christian Miller out of Georgia. It's an interior defensive lineman. I think we've moved to a point as a team where the bargain bin hunting in the interior defensive line needs to be done to some extent. I think you can do that with the other side. I think that, you know, picking up Tommy Togiai is a guy you can develop, and I think that's a great pickup. And I would love to bring back Sheldon Rankins as well. But I think that at the end of the day, getting a top-tier interior defensive lineman is hard to pass at that pick. There was some other players available. Monroe Freeling, I believe is his name, the tackle out of Georgia as well, was there, and that was a player I considered. It's just a matter of how you view it. Personally, I view Titus Howard as a right tackle, and when you view him as that, I think the more important thing is to go higher at guard, which is why with the second pick or the first second-round pick from Washington, number 38 overall, I went with Emmanuel Pergon out of Oregon. I've seen a lot of people say that maybe he's being pushed as more than what he is. And I think that's the case if you talk about taking him in the first round. I think there honestly probably a lot of teams that'll try and trade ahead of the Texans maybe to get him or the other available guard or tackle prospects that are potentially guards. So it is tough to play with that one in terms of how it shakes out. But I think in the second round, it's probably a little better value for him. And then with the other second round pick, I have the Texans taking Jadarian Price out of Notre Dame. Not the Notre Dame running back that I think most people would 100% love to see in Houston. I mean, there's a lot of Texans fans I've seen showing love to Jadarian Price, but obviously Jeremiah Love would be ideal. I did a mock draft. If you go check me out on at James Ryan NFL, easiest way to find it would be on Instagram. Where I you know, workshopped trading from 28 to the 8th pick with the Saints, which understanding the Saints want a running back too, it would be a little shady. I was trying to get in front of the Chiefs because I know if Jeremiah Love is there at 9, the Chiefs will probably take him. But trying to get Jeremiah Love onto the team, so that's something, a concept that I have put out there before. I think that I underpaid a little bit, but based off of projected pick value, it was accepted. So I, you know, can't do anything about that. And then the last pick in the third round, I spoke to him earlier, Jennings Dunker. I think if the Texans can come away with either one of the interior offensive linemen from Iowa's team, or any of them, even the center, then I think it's a win for this team. He's a quality prospect. Playing into what Tom said about Trent Brown's health, Jennings Dunker, along with Keelan Rutledge out of Georgia Tech, are two guys that I'm really high on, but their injury history is a little bit concerning. So, but the guy's a dog. And the best part about Jennings Dunker is that he played a lot of snaps inside. So he's basically like adding a second Titus Howard to the team where you just feel out which one you'd rather have at tackle and the other one can play guard. So that to me gives you two guys that can play guard, but obviously, ideally, you put Emmanuel Pergon in at guard, and Jennings Dunker would be more of a swing tackle depth pick at that point. Someone who's picked pretty high to kind of develop behind what you have. Now, I think that really puts a plan in place for moving on from Titus Howard, or if Ed Ingram was to leave, I think picking up Jennings Dunker would be a huge, huge pickup to push Titus Howard back out to tackle, or even to play Dunker at tackle if you wanted to do that. But that's kind of my thought process. Tom, what are your thoughts on this mock draft?
For the most part, I like it. I hate that you talked about Dunker with injury history, because I mean, I know football is a game where injuries happen, but you kind of want to try to find guys to steer away from that, right? So that you're not drafting these guys to put them in a position to protect CJ Stroud and then not be around. I don't understand the running back pick. We talked about it a little bit before the show. I really think that, you have young running backs on this team with Jawar Jordan, British Brooks, Woody Marks. I really think the move for them is to go get an experienced guy, whether it is Joe Mixon or Breece Hall or, Kenneth Walker is a free agent. I mean, he just won the Super Bowl MVP. He might not look bad in Texan colors. So, maybe that's the move as far as running back. And then you use these other young guys to support him that way. But I love the idea of getting the guard in the second round. It's really interesting. I think Texan fans as a whole will be really upset if the first round pick is a defensive player, just with the history that we have of just taking so many defensive players, knowing that there's a large, contingent that want the offensive line looked at. There's a large contingent that want a tight end. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if that's how it plays out, how Texans fans initially on Twitter are going, fire Nick Caserio, or, he's the GOAT.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from, and that's why I've been trying to put it out there. I'm like, Texans fans should be satisfied with an interior offensive or defensive line pick early. You want to get elite at those positions. And so if you believe you have a young guy who can be under contract for 4 to 5 years, that is a top tier talent at the position, I think it's worth taking a chance on that. Brandon here says he believes that he could see Kasiri trading up for Ioane. I hope I'm saying that right. That's the guard out of Penn State, which I would not be opposed to. That was a guy who I thought, based off his scouting report, looks like the kind of player that would be the swarm that this Texans offense needs. And then let's see. Oh, yeah. And he says keep Rankins around to teach scheme to whoever comes in. I agree with that. If Rankins is down to do it, I think that whoever is drafted that high probably starts alongside Rankins. And then you've got Mario Edwards is under contract. You could save $5 million by cutting him. So I don't know if he's still there. Tim Settle, I think, is a free agent. So then, and so is Foley Fotokasi. So that would just leave, I said his name earlier, Tommy Togiai, as the rotational guy. You just need to flesh out the depth on that side of the ball, which the Texans have shown well at doing. And it's a position that the coaching has shown to be able to work with. So wouldn't be super concerned about that. On Instagram, we have a comment. Someone said, what do we think? Well, they said, why do we think, but I think they meant, what do we think of Jacob Rodriguez? Jacob Rodriguez, a linebacker out of Texas Tech. I featured him in most of my mock drafts. I think it'd be a great pickup. Christian Harris leaving. I think the Texans are likely to extend Azeez Al-Shaair, but he's already under contract for a few years anyways. But looking at that position, it's really Al-Shaair and Henry Toa'atoa, and love Henry Toa'atoa to death, but I think that he's better in a rotational role than in a starting role. So I think the goal should be to find someone who can start alongside Azeez Al-Shaair. And I think that Jacob Rodriguez could be that guy. The question is people have said he's a little undersized. He's comparable in size to Sean Lee out of Penn State. So I don't see how that's undersized at all based off performance of Sean Lee. But, I like the idea of him because he's shown better in coverage, and that's something that the Texans need at the linebacker position, is a guy who can be a coverage guy. But what are your thoughts, Tom? Do you have any thoughts?
I don't know a lot about the guy we're talking about right now, so I don't want to sit here and say, yeah, they should get him or no. I mean, I think Toa Toa is fine, except for, you know, the coverage issue. But it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to give up the guy that's a headhunter, you know, can lead your team in tackles, dude, for a dude that's going to play more coverage? I mean, it's, you can't have both. Obviously, you'd love to have a complete player that could do it all. And I'm okay with Toa Toa being the dude that is going to stick his nose in there and help in the run game versus taking him, making him rotational, and bringing in a guy that's just going to be another, you know, cornerback, safety, hybrid, nickel type guy. I get it. The Texans got burnt there a lot, but I just don't think you can cover both fronts. You can either be stingy against the run and just be really good against the pass, or stingy against the pass. Give me the run game, I guess. I'm more intrigued by this rumor that I saw on Twitter that says that the Texans are going to be players in the Mike Evans, you know, free agency, which I think is just so funny. Wouldn't that be cool, though? A Verlander to Tigers type story, bring, you know, the Galveston native home to Houston for one last ride. I just can't see it.
I was the first one to be dismissive of the, why did we draft Jaden Higgins? He's basically Nico Collins. We need other types of receivers.
And then he balled out.
I think that there's a, oh man, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I'm really mad that I'm not able to pick the name off the top of my head, but he, I think, has the right thought process, which is that I'd really like to see the Texans draft a more of a speed guy, like a Will Fuller type, without the drop problems and the injury problems, you know.
Isn't that what Noel is, though?
Yeah, but and it's also what, you know, Tank Dell is, but I think for depth purposes, a guy who can do that. I think like Tyron Montgomery out of John Carroll was a guy at the Senior Bowl that showed that skill set. Man, I'm going to hate myself for not being able to recall this name. I'll have to look it up later, and I'm just going to have to hate myself. But I think that going for more of that archetype of receiver, and it brings up another point, which is that to me, I think one of the big things the Texans offense needs to do, the offensive scheme and play calling got better throughout the season. But my final thought, because I'll save a lot more of them for, you know, the rest of the offseason, is that there was a notable drop in the amount of times that Nico Collins was used inside and in motion. And I think that was a lot of what really opened up Nico Collins for CJ Stroud. I'd like to see more of that. And I'd like to see Nick Caley show the understanding that, because it's the most surprising thing about all of that is that Nick Caley comes from an offensive scheme that literally with Puka Nacua, with Davante Adams, literally used motion and stuff and false runs and all of those tools to open up Puka Nacua and put him in a position to be what Puka Nacua is. And so it's surprising to see that not being something that translates to Nico Collins, given his usage, you know, in Bobby Slowick's scheme, you know, inside, outside. It appears as though he's just being used as an outside X wide receiver, and I think that it's a disservice to his skill set. But Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we hop off?
Just to that point, I think they did use Nico plenty on in-breaking routes till he got that concussion, and then that's when it kind of went away. If you recall, that's exactly what he was doing when he got the concussion. So I want to see, like you said, the crux of that is more from Nick Caley. Like, he has to develop to, as much as we're talking about the offensive line, as much as we're talking about CJ Stroud, as much as we're talking about interior defensive line, Nick Caley has to grow up fast in a hurry. There was always going to be growing pains. You knew that going in, first year signal caller. You know, didn't do, it wasn't like he was a passing game coordinator or anything like that. This was a tight ends coach that all of a sudden they handed the playbook and said, all right, go to work. So now I know the titles may not be what they are, and he may have more of a say and that sort of thing, but we saw it. There were times where the offense like literally got bogged down, and it's a chess game. He's got to be able to see what the defense is trying to do to him and adapt. And there were games where it never looked like that was going to happen. And for me, when he can get to that point, when you get that real McVay type look, I'm going to find ways to get the ball as the best player. That's when you're really going to see this team take off offensively.
All right. Yeah. Well, welcome to the offseason. This has been our overview of what the Texans need to do. I think we didn't really hit too hard on free agency. We did touch on it, but obviously this is an overview.
This is the tampering period.
We'll be diving deeper into all of that as it comes along. So make sure you're tuned in with the bullpen. I have been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL, wherever you get your social media at. Tom is TCTom1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are the Bullpen, the number one veteran run Texans podcast of the offseason. And this offseason and every offseason. all right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos, Texans.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.